At that time, I had never used any junk, and it did not occur to me to try it. I began looking for someone to buy the two items, and that is how I ran into Roy and Herman. I knew a young hoodlum from upstate New York who was working as a short order cook in Rikers, cooling off, as he explained. I called him and said I had something to get rid of, and made an appointment to meet him in the Angle Bar on 8th Avenue near 42nd Street. This bar was a meeting place for 42nd Street hustlers, a peculiar breed of four-flushing would-be criminals. They're always looking for a setup man, someone to plan jobs and tell them exactly what to do, since no setup man would have anything to do with people so obviously inept, unlucky, and unsuccessful. They go on looking, fabricating preposterous lies about their big scores, cooling off as dishwashers, soda jerks, waiters, occasionally rolling a drunk or a timid queer, looking, always looking for the setup man with a big job who'll say, "I've been watching you. You're the man I need for this setup. Now listen." Jack, through whom I met Roy and Herman, was not one of these lost sheep looking for the shepherd with a diamond ring and a gun in the shoulder holster and the hard, confident voice with overtones of connections, fixes, setups that would make a stick-up sound easy and sure of success. Jack was very successful from time to time and would turn up in new clothes and even new cars. He was also an inveterate liar who seemed to lie more for himself than for any visible audience. He had a clean-cut, healthy country face, but there was something curiously diseased about him. He was subject to sudden fluctuations in weight, like a diabetic or a sufferer from liver trouble. These changes in weight were often accompanied by an uncontrollable fit of restlessness, so that he would disappear for some days. The effect was uncanny. You would see him one time, a fresh-faced kid. A week or so later, he would turn up so thin, sallow, and old-looking, you'd have to look twice to recognize him. His face was lined with suffering in which his eyes did not participate. It was a suffering of his cells alone. He himself, the conscious ego that looked out of the glazed, alert, calm, hoodlum eyes, would have nothing to do with this suffering of his rejected other self, a suffering of the nervous system, of flesh and viscera and cells. He slid into the booth where I was sitting and ordered a shot of whiskey. He tossed it off, put the glass down, and looked at me with his head tilted a little to one side and back. "What's this guy got?" he said. "A Tommy gun and about 35 grains of morphine. The morphine I can get rid of right away, but the Tommy gun may take a little time." Two detectives walked in and leaned on the bar talking to the bartender. Jack jerked his head in their direction. "The law. Let's take a walk." I followed him out of the bar. He walked through the door sliding sideways. "I'm taking you to someone who will want the morphine," he said. "You want to forget this address." We went down to the bottom level of the independent subway. Jack's voice, talking to his invisible audience, went on and on. He had a knack of throwing his voice directly into your consciousness. No external noise drowned him out. "Give me a 38 every time. Just flick back the hammer and let her go. I'll drop anyone at 500 feet. Don't care what you say. My brother has 2 .30-caliber machine guns stashed in Iowa." We got off the subway and began to walk on snow-covered sidewalks between tenements. "This guy owed me for a long time, see? I knew he had it, but he wouldn't pay, so I waited for him when he finished work. I had a roll of nickels. No one can hang anything on you for carrying U.S. currency. Told me he was broke. I cracked his jaw and took my money off him. Two of his friends standing there, but they kept out of it. I'd have switched a blade on him." We were walking up tenement stairs. The stairs were made of worn black metal. We stopped in front of a narrow, metal-covered door, and Jack gave an elaborate knock, inclining his head to the floor like a safecracker. The door was opened by a large, flabby, middle-aged queer with tattooing on his forearms and even on the backs of his hands. "This is Joey," Jack said. And Joey said, "Hello there."